and welcome to Broadway Radios. This week on Broadway for Sunday, June 11, 2017, otherwise known as the morning before the night. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast today we have Peter Felicia and Michael Portantier. Peter is a theater journalist and historian with a number of books. His most recent is The Great Parade, which is available everywhere. His columns appear at MTI, Masterworks, Broadway, Broadway Select, and many of the places. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Good morning. Also with us is Michael Portantier. Michael is a theater reviewer and essayist whose work appears at Talkin' Broadway, Everything Sondheim, and Broadway Stars. He is also a theatrical photographer whose photos have appeared in the New York Times and other major publications. You could see his photography work at followspotphoto.com. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
So first of all, we have a lot of congratulations in order for Peter. I thought that the Theater World Awards were wonderful.
And well, God love you.
It's just such a wonderful tribute to the people who work in this Broadway community. We had some really wonderfully touching speeches there. I mean, and last but not least, but John Briones talking about his journey to Broadway and that he's never, ever leaving, which is great. He can stay in my place.
Sure. Yeah, it really was a very nice thing. And what I loved best was that Glenn Close, getting a Lifetime Achievement Award, acted as if this was the most important award that has ever happened in the history of mankind. She was so gracious about it. She was in no hurry to get away. She went to the party and stayed for a long, long time. So God love her. And I was worried, you know, because I had a joke about her. And before the board, I don't choose the Lifetime Achievement Award, the board does. So I had this joke about her, and then when they said it was going to be she, I thought, uh-oh, I'm in trouble, because I was talking about the fact that that night Phantom of the Opera was playing performance 12,214, and I said, that's how many curtain calls Glenn Close takes every night at Sunset Boulevard. But, you know, I thought I ameliorated it by putting up my hands and saying, and she deserves every one of them. So yes. I got my joke in and got the tribute in as well. Anyway, she didn't leave, so she didn't leave.
No. She did, but we couldn't find Dale Badway.
So. right.
Which is the beauty of live theater. The beauty of live theater. And Len Cario stepped in and jumped in right away. And boy, we heard quite the story about Glenn and Len, huh? And
well, so here's the thing. Let me tell you that General Stephen Wilde is his name, who was friendly with Len Cariou, said, I can get Len to perform. And I said, oh, good. Why don't you have him presented to Glenn Close? I had no idea that they were
an idea
from 79 to 83. And he said, you know, I don't know if it ended well. You know, it might have ended badly. And I said, I guarantee you that if indeed it ended badly, both of them want to show to the world that they're over it, you know, and that's exactly what happened, you know. So, you know, it's not like me and my ex-wife if we got together anyway. So, so all things considered, it was a very nice ceremony. And what's really great about it is that people usually don't come up and say, I want to thank my producers, my director, my cast. Usually people tell a story about how they got where they were or somebody who influenced them. There was lots of tributes to parents and teachers, and I thought that was really quite wonderful. Because I have learned from interviewing millions of people that if your parents are behind you, you have a better chance of succeeding. And if you have good teachers, you even have a better chance still. So it was nice to hear people out of the blue. I didn't tell them to do that, actually do that. So I thought that was really quite wonderful. And that's one of the things that makes the ceremony very nice, that parents and teachers do get their due in detail.
Mm. Well, I have to say, regarding Len Cariou, when he was a younger man, he certainly got around, because he dated Lauren Bacall, among other people.
Well, I do. You know, Lauren Bacall had a reputation of being a potentially difficult lady. So I remember saying to him once, out of the blue, was Lauren Bacall nice to you? And he said, Oh, yeah, she was nice to me. So, you know, that's when I knew that they had an affair. So which is exactly the way Marilyn May sounded when I asked her about Alan King, by the way. Well, here we are gossiping. I'm sorry. I apologize. Let's take it to a higher level.
I think since we're talking about 40 or 50 years ago, it's okay.
Statute of limitations have run out on these affairs. Right. Good point.
Yeah, it was some really wonderful speeches at the Theater World Awards. Carlo Alban and
Carlo Alban and Amber Gray gave a lovely, lovely speech. Oh, yeah. Raymond Lee, everyone was stellar in their speeches. I thought
Kobe Smulders. I was yes. Starting to tear up during her speech. It was. It's a wonderful award. Please make sure that you, if you are able to get in touch with Peter next year, that you get to these awards, because there's something special. And Peter, I was thinking through the whole thing. Has there ever been an attempt to record it, or is it not the type of thing that you want recorded?
I have no knowledge of that. I mean, every now and then somebody gives me a DVD saying we recorded it. You know, nobody's offered it this year. But anyway, I really don't know if it's hit or miss. So maybe in a week or so, I'll say, yeah, they did record it. But at this point, I really don't know.
All right. And the other wonderful thing that I wanted to mention is I saw some really great photographs from the Drama Bookshop and William Daniels event there. What's the report on that?
Well, what's really nice is the fact that, I mean, William Daniels is no kid now. I believe he's 91. The fact that he was able to tell so many stories. Every now and then he was coached by his wife, I will grant you, who did jump in and say, no, you're conflating that story with that story. But by and large, if he wasn't quite sharp as a tack, he was certainly quite sharp. And it was really wonderful to see him tell so many stories that got so many laughs. That's what was really great about it. He really entertained the crowd. And he was in no hurry to get away. Many of those Drama Bookshop events are really about a half hour, and he was more than that, and that was really great to see that he didn't lose his energy, and a good time was had by all, and I've never seen the place so packed. There actually had to be people sitting on the stage area encircling him because there were just too many people there. So it really was a very successful event, and I was just delighted to hear him there talk about and not being afraid to name names. He certainly didn't speak well of Jason Robards, he indicated that when they were doing 1,000 Clowns, that it took him and Jason Robards an act to sober up. The good thing is, of course, 1,000 Clowns was a 3-act play rather than the 2-act play. So it's nice that it didn't take that long for him to sober up as opposed to conventionally. So, but I was very, very pleased to see that he remembered so much and wanted to be there and wanted to show everybody a good time.
Have you guys heard the Elaine Tritch story with Jason Robards in Love Letters?
No, I haven't. Go ahead.
Okay, well, no. I'm going to have to tell you after we get off the air.
But considering the source, it might
right.
It might be either embellished or not true at all.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so as I mentioned, right now is the morning before the night, so we do not know what has happened at the Tony Awards for 2017, as you might be listening to this after the fact. But what we're going to do this morning is we're going to talk about not what will win, but what should win. What were our choices of these things? And so just a general conversation. Let's start off with Best Play, where we have A Doll's House Part 2, Indecent, Oslo, and Sweat. So, Peter, why don't you start us off there?
Sure. I'm very happy with any of these plays winning because I think they're all very good. But I'm really rooting for Indecent more than any other because it was the oddest play to be there, to take this incident that happened years ago with God of Vengeance, a play about lesbianism that many of us didn't know. Who expected way back then at the turn of the century or not shortly thereafter that there would be a play about lesbianism? It would seem to be impossible. And also the fact that it was so wonderfully staged. Everybody comes out of there talking about dust, and it's very effective. Everybody comes out talking about the line of people. And so that's the one I would like to see win. I am perfectly happy with any of the other three because I thought they were all great.
Michael, what did you think?
Well, the only one of the four that I would eliminate from my choice would have to be Sweat, because although I think there's a lot of really good writing in it, not to mention acting, I also thought that there were some flaws in the construction and the writing. The other three, it's so hard to choose. Typical case of three wonderful plays being so different from each other that how do you even possibly compare? Indecent certainly is extraordinary in its dramatization of this incredibly compelling story in itself. And I'm sure many of us, most of us, I think it's fair to say, did not know the backstory of the god of the god of
vengeance.
God of vengeance. I knew I was going to do that. Yeah. I always have to stop.
I do that.
The god of vengeance, the Sholem Ash play about this Jewish, highly religious Jewish brothel owner whose daughter winds up falling in love with one of the women in the whorehouse, basically. Needless to say, there is a huge setup for drama there, and boy, do we get it. But also, I admire Doll's House greatly for the way that the playwright is able to give very compelling arguments to all of the three or four, I should say, major characters. And as I also said, the idea that anyone could write a play in which a sequel to A Doll's House in which Torvald, Nora's husband, is made to look like he has he is not a complete villain and that he has a point and perhaps Nora was the one who made the wrong decision in walking out. I think that's an amazing achievement. And Oslo is a wonderful, brilliant play on a completely different in a different style, dealing with the true story of these back level peace talks that were held in Norway involving trying to get peace in the Middle East. So I guess I would have to say A Doll's House, but I don't even feel a strong preference for it over those other two.
So I feel like John McLaughlin here. You ever watch the McLaughlin Group?
Yes.
Before John passed away? You're all wrong. It's going to be Oslo. Oslo wins. Next up, best musical, Come From Away. Dear Evan Hansen, Groundhog Day, the musical, and Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. So, Peter, what's about the best musical category?
Again, I'm very happy with all of them, though with some degree of preference for the three, Natasha, Come From Away, A Dear Evan Hansen. But what I loved about Come From Away was that it made me feel good about people, that I saw people being nice to each other, and I can watch that all night long. So as a result, under those circumstances, I would like to see that win. I do have a tiny problem with Evan Hansen, as I've mentioned in the past, that when the parents find out that their kid has committed suicide, they move on too quickly for my taste. I wish that they would ask Evan Hansen, well, you were his friend. What happened? What was he like that day? No, but that never comes up. So under those circumstances, I'm rooting for Come From Away.
Michael.
Yeah, that last flaw you mentioned, Peter, again, though, when was the last time you saw the show?
When it opened.
Yeah, well, I guess suppose they haven't changed it since then, but I thought that there was a fair amount of that, but I guess you're just saying you think there should have been more of it. I have my major plot storytelling issues with Dear Evan Hansen, which I wish I didn't have, because overall I love the show and I think the score is extraordinary and those two guys are so talented. One interesting thing though is that I find of all of these shows, the one album that I really spend the most time listening to is Natasha Pierre. Maybe that's because I already had the Off-Broadway cast and so already was familiar with it. But the other three, as much as I really like them in watching them, it's also partly, I suppose, lack of time. I mean, until recently, we've all been seeing like five or six shows a week, and I personally have found very little time to listen to cast albums. But for whatever it's worth, that's the one that I've been going to so far. I really do want to delve into these other three cast albums and see what happens. It doesn't appear that Groundhog Day has a chance for Best Musical, but in all things considered, I would have to say that it was my favorite, although it didn't start out that way. I didn't think it began very well, but I really got pulled into the story and Andy Carl's performance. But I would not be sad if any of the other ones won. And Come From Away, I just wanted to say I strongly object to anyone who says, and there are people who do, that this show is in any way making bank off of the tragedy of 9/11. I think that comment in itself is offensive, and I could not disagree more, and I don't see anyone how anyone can interpret it that way.
I'm with you, Michael.
Thank you.
So I find myself coming back to Dear Evan Hansen over and over, and I do recognize the issue that you're talking about, Peter, with the parents, but I feel like the show is about Evan Hansen. It's really not about the parents and that thing. It's about the aftermath of that. But I find myself more emotionally engaged with Dear Evan Hansen than the other three, which I loved, and as we've are going to say quite often this morning, if any of them win, I won't be sad.
Well, you know, one other thing, Peter, is that are you talking about the first scene where between the parents and Evan Hansen primarily?
I guess primarily I am. All I know is all the parents I've known who have had kids that commit suicide, and I'm sorry to say I know plenty, have been far more inquisitive about what happened than these people are.
Well, the only thing I would say to that is, I mean, we're not supposed to think that Evan was present for the suicide, correct?
Nevertheless, more questions would be asked.
Right, but what all I'm saying is that you can see in that first scene that they're trying to get closer to this kid, and I think that maybe in their minds, as time goes by, they will ask more questions, and I think they do that, in fact, also. So to me, it's not a flaw, because it's just like I don't think they necessarily want all the answers right away, especially since they know he wasn't actually there. If that makes any sense.
Well, no, I do feel that they would want the answers right away indeed, whatever they may be. And they would try to get answers even if they were not expecting answers. People have a lot of curiosity about a big event like this. And I have to say, even last week, I heard about a suicide. So it happens a lot. And I know the people who had it happen to them last week are asking a lot of questions that the people in Evan Hansen don't seem to want to ask. Mm-hmm.
All right. In the best book of a musical, we have Come From Away, Dear Evan Hansen, Groundhog Day, and Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. Very similar to the last category. So,
very
Peter, what about that?
Well, the thing about the best book is that what's really wonderful is the two of them are complete originals, both Come From Away and Dear Evan Hansen. The Groundhog Day is certainly effective, but it wasn't that hard for the original writer of Groundhog Day to adapt his book to the stage. By the way, when I say not that hard, all musicals are incredibly difficult, but I mean, comparatively speaking, you have to admire Dave Malloy for being able to condense as much of War and Peace as he did. I know he didn't do the whole book, but nevertheless, that's not an easy job to do. But I'm more inclined to be appreciative of the people who started with a blank page or a blank computer screen. And so therefore, it's between those two. Again, I'd vote for Come From Away because it did make me see something I didn't see before, that when a whole town sees people in trouble, they can think of nothing but helping them. And I love that to the nth degree. And so that's why I would like to see Come From Away win it.
Michael, how about you?
Well, another interesting thing about this category is that two of the musicals are essentially through sung, Come From Away and Natasha Pierre, for whatever that's worth. But that doesn't mean they don't have a book, as has been pointed out many times before. I think I would go for Come From Away also. I think that there were so many potential landmines in musicalizing or even dramatizing this story. And I think they were avoided beautifully. I have great admiration for it. My only, if whatever negatives I have on Come From Away would only be that I don't think the score is especially skillful or memorable, although very pleasant. So I don't think that's going to be my choice in the next category. But as far as the book, I would say yes. Dear Evan Hansen would probably be my choice if I didn't think there were still major plot holes and other problems in it, including the title. Groundhog Day, I liked very much. But, you know, they had the template of the movie, which I think was followed very closely. So I maybe they lose a few points for that. And Natasha Pierre also would be my second choice, I guess, or my alternate choice for the win, because I think that the way that Dave Malloy, the section of War and Peace that he chose to dramatize and the way he did it, and the clarity of it, despite the fact that there are so many characters, I think that's all very well done.
In this case, you're both correct. So next up, the best original score, music and lyrics written for the theater come from Away, Dear Evan Hansen, Groundhog Day, and Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. So, Peter.
I think it's going to go to Dear Evan Hansen, and it's fine with me that if it does, because even just for that song at the end, dealing with the kid in the truck, being so excited to see a truck, not aware that his whole life is going to change tremendously as a result of that truck leaving. That to me is one of the great ideas for songs in the 55 years I've been following musicals. So I'm all set with that. And also, given the fact these guys won the Oscar, I don't think that Broadway is going to ignore them. I think they're going to jump on that bandwagon and let it happen. But it's perfectly fine with me. And, you know, the thing is, Come From Away, while an amazing piece of work and a real achievement where it comes to score in its own way, doesn't have that type of template that we expect from Broadway musicals. So I'm hoping for Evan Hansen to get it. And by the way, those guys are terrific human beings. I hope they still are after they win all these awards.
Michael, what did you think?
Yeah, I would, I guess, not go with Come From Away or Groundhog Day, because I think even though the scores function beautifully in context of the show, they're not as memorable. They're not as melodic. They're not as much scores that you want to listen to out of context on the album. And I think it's fair to make that an issue. The other two, I would be happy with either choice, Dear Evan Hansen or Natasha Pierre. I think there are some really great things in Natasha Pierre, and the only negative things there, I think, are some of the sung dialogue is a little clunky, but some of it is brilliant. And Dear Evan Hansen, again, think of the characters in that show and how difficult it is to write songs for those people without them seeming cloying or pathetic. You know, they really achieved a remarkable score there, those two guys. So I'm with Peter on that.
And I will make it unanimous that I think Dear Evan Hansen's the best of this bunch, which are all very good. So in the best revival of a play category, we have August Wilson's Jitney, John Guerra's 6 Degrees of Separation, Lillian Hellman's The Little Foxes, and Noel Coward's Present Laughter. So, Peter.
Well, I think the only one that doesn't have a chance is 6 Degrees, but in terms of what I would like to see, I'm perfectly happy with Jitney and the Little Foxes duking it out. Present Laughter was very good, but I think it's a bit behind. And boy, I love seeing the Little Foxes, and this one didn't disappoint me. And the fact that they did the switch of the two leading ladies, I think, is something that puts it a tiny bit ahead for me, as wonderful as Jitney is. Jitney is not a play that was new to me. I've seen it 4 times in other productions here, there, and everywhere. So, and this was the finest of them all, I'll grant you. But because of that strange casting thing in Little Foxes, I would like to see it win.
Michael.
You know, I would echo everything you just said, and I completely agree for those exact same reasons. So I have nothing else to say.
Okay. I'm on the bandwagon with August Wilson's Jitney. I thought that it had a much greater impression upon me than The Little Foxes did, although I really enjoyed The Little Foxes as well. All right. Best revival of a musical. We have Falsetto's Hello, Dolly! And Miss Saigon. Now, let's not just jump in and say, you know, we all know that that conventional wisdom is going to go with Miss Saigon. So,
right.
P, Peter.
I'm going to buck the trend and say it's going to be Hello, Dolly. Yeah, case closed. Really. And why not? And why not? I mean, it was beautifully done in terms of sets and costumes. The money was on the stage. Granted, this is a situation where a producer says, you know, if we spend a lot of money, we can charge a lot of money and people won't resent it as much as if we don't spend a lot of money and charge a lot of money. So at least you can see the money on the stage after you've given up your arm and your leg to see the show. But yeah, that's definitely the best revival of the season. And I'm also hoping that because it's so wonderful that a lot of people who go who don't usually see Golden Age musicals and first-class productions will say, oh, so this is what musicals used to be like. I'd like to see more of them.
So spend a little money and charge a lot of money. That was the Sunday in the Park, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. Michael, what did you think of this category?
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things about the show, Peter, is that it's done so completely traditionally. I think maybe some people felt that you can't do a show that way anymore. And boy, does this prove that that's not true. Now, this may lead to may or may not lead to a bunch of revivals that are recreations or, you know, very traditional. And not all of those will probably be as brilliant as this one. But I think it's nice to if it serves as a corrective and reminds people that you don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater, because there were so many brilliant elements in that original production and many of them are recreated here in one way or another. Aside from the general style, which is so traditional. So, yes, Hello, Dolly. Absolutely.
You know, the betting establishments in the UK, you know how you have the I forget what they call them, Pollers or whatever they are, the places you can bet on anything. I don't even think they are taking any bets on revival of a musical. I think that they're just giving it up a foregone conclusion. Hello, Dolly. And if Hello, Dolly doesn't win, it'll be the biggest upset since November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So best performance by an actor in a leading role in a play, Dennis Arndt in Heisenberg, Chris Cooper, A Doll's House Part 2, Corey Hawkins in 6 Degrees of Separation, Kevin Kline, Present Laughter, and Jefferson Mays in Oslo. So, Peter.
Well, the thing is that when you look at all the rest of these, really, Dennis Arndt is the only one, along with Kevin Kline, who really had a major role. No, Dennis Arndt did because, of course, it was a two-character play, so obviously he had about 50% of it. But in a way, the other roles are somewhat supporting given the nature of the play. If we really counted lines of dialogue and all that, and I'm not saying that's the way anybody should go, but the point is the other roles are not dominant in the way that Kevin Kline's is in Present Laughter or Dennis Arndt in Heisenberg. But we're at a point in time where it's time to give Kevin Kline another Tony Award, and that's fine with me that he gets it.
Michael, what do you think?
You know, looking at the list, I would say that a strong case could be made for Dennis Arndt as the most deserving. I think he was really great in that, even though I had big problems with the play. And actually, in a way, that makes his achievement even greater. He was superb in that play. But I also really appreciated getting the chance to see Kevin Kline play a role he was born to play and do it so brilliantly. And he is more of a name. And so I think it will be him.
I'm going to go against wisdom there and say that Jefferson Mays is my favorite in this category. And we'll see what happens. In the best...
We will.
Yes. the best performance by an actress in a leading role in a play, Kate Blanchett in The Present, Jennifer Ely in Oslo, Sally Field in The Glass Menagerie, Laura Linney in Little Foxes, and Laurie Metcalf in A Doll's House Part 2. So, Peter.
I want a tie. I want Laurie Metcalf and Laura Linney to win because they're both magnificent. And as I've said about Laurie Metcalf, I cannot imagine that playwright watching this play and saying, my God, it's even better than I thought it would be. I don't have that reaction very often, if ever. And that was my reaction when I saw this. Boy, did she take that bull by the horns. No question about it. But Laura Linney is certainly the sun and the moon as well and has not won with a number of nominations to her credit. So it may be her time to come. But I don't expect any of the other three to win. But if one does, I'll be astonished. But I want a tie.
So there was a tie at the Drama Desk last Sunday. What was it?
Right.
Was it this category or was it something?
No, it was
else?
Direction. It was direction of a musical. Both the director of Natasha and the band's visit, Rachel Chafkin and David Cromer, tied. So that's what happened there. And you know, ties are pretty rare. And I don't know, have we?
Do
I
we
guess
have
the last
a history.
Well,
the Tonys?
The last one I could remember would be in 1993 when for Best Score. Would you have ever thought that you would have seen Kander and Ebb on the stage, same stage as Pete Townsend getting the same award? I mean, you know, it just goes to show anything can happen in life, you know. So I think that was the last tie, I think.
Michael, what did you think of this category?
Well, I would go with Laurie Metcalf also. I thought she was extraordinary, and I echo all of those sentiments as well. She's been so great in other things as well, that play The Other Place. She gave a magnificent performance in that maybe she should have gotten more recognition for that. But this is, you know, it's from the moment you hear her knocking on the other side of that door and then she enters, she's riveting. And everything she says, whether you violently disagree or agree with it, you just hang on every word, and which, of course, is a great tribute to the playwright as well. But her performance is extraordinary. I also wouldn't mind a tie with Laura Linney, but I don't think that's going to happen. Sally Field, I thought, managed to be wonderful in a horrendous, disrespectful production of The Glass Menagerie. Jennifer Ely was beautiful, just beautiful in Oslo, and I think the only reason she is not really in the running is because of the nature of the role, which was more gentle and maybe not as central to the plays as the other characters in the other plays. And Cate Blanchett was great, but the fact that she brought that unworthy mess of a play written by her husband to Broadway when she could have done something else instead really pisses me off. So I hope she doesn't get it.
Okay. So Laurie Metcalf is my favorite in this category, although I think you summarized the rest of them very well for me. I'm in agreement with much of what you've said. In the best performance by an actor in a leading role in a musical, we have Christian Borle for Falsettos. I don't know why I'm tripping over that. Josh Groban, Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. Andy Carl, Groundhog Day. David Hyde Pierce, Hello Dolly. And Ben Platt for Dear Evan Hansen. So, Peter, what say you?
Well, I think it's going to go to Ben Platt because his reviews have been extraordinary. But I'm one of the very few. I may be the only one who finds the performance very actory. So under the circumstances, I would rather see Andy Carl get it for Groundhog Day. And if he does get it, I hope it's not because he's got that brace in his leg. It's a very nuanced performance. I saw it again last week, and he really makes his journey with this character very, very convincing. So I would like to see Andy Carl get it. I don't expect it, but I'd like to see it.
So let me jump in here for a second and say that I have seen someone out there looking for 30 leg braces that may or may not show up on the on the stage at the Radio City Music Hall tonight. So I think that might be something you look forward to tonight. So perhaps everybody's going to come out with one on.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And the Rockettes are going to show up in the Tony Awards tonight. And I meant to ask the two of you guys, have the Rockettes ever performed on the Tonys before? I can't remember if they had.
I think they did once.
That seems to be in my memory.
And not that long ago, it seemed to me. But obviously not before they got to Radio City.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Michael, what about this category?
Well, the only one I would discount is Christian Borle, who's one of my favorite actors of all time, but I thought he was miscast and misdirected in Falsettos. The others, I think any of them is worthy of an award. I see what Peter means about the actory factor of Ben Platt, but of course that's so subjective, and the character is supposed to be so, you know, so self-aware and so emotionally scarred that I think that he does a wonderful job of communicating that to the audience. An interesting thing there is, as I'm sure you've both heard or read, he had to miss this entire week of performances because he was put on vocal rest. And I just wanted to say I was actually a little surprised about that, because although he gives an extremely intense performance, the two times I saw the show, I did note that I thought he was using his voice very, very skillfully in order to preserve it. For example, he uses head voice quite often, at least the performances that I saw, but not in a way that that diminished the emotional content. If anything, it amplified it. So I was a little surprised, but of course, people still get sick and allergies and blah blah blah. So I'm sorry for the timing of that, but I think he is just great in it and well deserved. He would be very well deserved if he wins the Tony. On the other hand, Andy Karl is one of the most talented people on the planet, and he, even in Rocky, which I had great problems with, was great. I've loved him on stage all the way back to Altar Boys, which was, I think, is essentially his first great thing. And if he wins, I would be thrilled as well.
So with this new information that I can pick a tie, Andy Karl and Ben Platt are my favorites in this category. I think that Ben Platt's going to come out with it, but Andy Karl still gave a really wonderful performance, and I wouldn't dispute that if he had won as well. In the best performance by an actress in a leading role in a musical, we have Danae Benton and Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812, Christine Ebersole in War Paint, Patti LuPone in War Paint, Bette Midler in Hello, Dolly, and Eva Noble-Zeta in Miss Saigon. So, Peter.
Go on.
Michael. Okay.
Next. Okay. Well, one thing I'll say is that if the timing were a little different, I think that it seems like there is a certain amount of bad will that has built up around Hello, Dolly and Bette Midler for various reasons. And that might have affected the outcome. But I think that maybe that happened a little too late for that to be a factor. So I expect that she will win. And the two performances I saw, she was really stellar in every way except some vocal problems, which apparently are a chronic issue. People should be aware of that. If you're going to see it, don't expect beautiful singing through the whole show. But energy, comic timing, and all of that, it's exactly what you want. And I think very, very few people, if any, are going to be disappointed. So yeah, she's going to get it. And anyone else would be deserving. I want to give a shout out to Eva Noblezada, who really just redefined that role for me. I think she's brilliant. And she, by the way, is yet another person who gave yet another beautiful speech at the Theater World Awards.
Yeah, that's true. So we've not mentioned it up to this point, but now is the point in the discussion when we have our yearly talk about the Road Voters. That Bette Midler and Hello, Dolly, certainly I can't imagine in a million years she's going to tour.
No.
So maybe they would be more likely to vote for somebody else, possibly a Danae Benton. I don't know if Christine or Patty would tour either in a War Paint tour.
That's a really interesting point. I never occurred to me, James, that the actor awards are affected by whether or not something's going to tour.
Well, the only reason that it does happen is because they love to boast winner X number of Tony Awards, and having an extra one never hurts. So in a way it does. I mean, and it's so unfair to say, you know, winner of 6 Tony Awards when none of them is Best Musical, but they do it, and they're not ashamed to do it either. So it is a tiny factor. I will grant you that. But, and you know, I know what you're saying about that ill will. You know, I don't remember if I actually actually said at the theater world was, I think I forgot to say when I said Josh Groban wasn't here, I wanted to say, and maybe both of you can tell me if I did or didn't, who does he think he is, Bette Midler? I don't remember saying it. I
don't remember saying
to.
It either.
Yeah, no. I had planned to, but
cooler heads prevailed.
But anyway, you know, when I was going to the Drama Desk Awards last Sunday, I did say to my theater companion, you know, don't be surprised if she doesn't get it because of this ill will. And so I know exactly what you're talking about, Michael. But nevertheless, the Tonys are, after all, a national event, and I do think they want her to get up there.
Next category, best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play. Oh, I always get this guy's name wrong. Michael Aronoff. Michael Aronoff in Oslo, Danny DeVito in Arthur Miller's The Price. Oh, I have to fix that. Nathan Lane, The Front Page, and Richard Thomas in The Little Foxes, and John Douglas Thompson in August Wilson's Jitney. I said I had to fix this because I screwed up twice this week on Today on Broadway because I got in my head for some reason Danny DeVito was not nominated, but he was nominated, and here he is. So that was just my... I got that wrong all this week on Today on Broadway. So, Peter.
Well, this is a tough one for me because John Douglas Thompson is somebody I've admired off-Broadway for years, and he was wonderful as the father in this play. Danny DeVito never convinced me he was 90 years old, but in the six productions of The Price I've seen, I've never enjoyed that role as much as I did with him. So, Nathan Lane has won before, so he's fine, you know, with the ones he has. He doesn't need this award for best featured actor in a play. And I don't think he's expecting it for a tenth of a second. So there is a dark horse in Richard Thomas with Little Foxes. But I guess I am rooting for John Douglas Thompson to win. But if Danny DeVito does, I'm reasonably okay with that, too.
Michael.
John Douglas Thompson, who, by the way, is brilliant as Cassius in the extremely weird production of Julius Caesar that is currently on view at the Delacorte in Central Park. He's one of our greatest actors, and he would be entirely deserving of this award. To me, the only one I would say not so much is Nathan Lane, only because it's not that he wasn't good, and he certainly brought life to an otherwise somewhat moribund production, I thought. But, I don't want to say the same thing over, you know, the same tricks, but there was a lot of that. I mean, there's a lot of elements of his performance that we've seen before, and they work, so don't get me wrong, but I think I'm making my point. I agree about Danny DeVito. Yes, he didn't seem 90, but he just brought the roof off, and every time he came on, the audience was in the palm of his hand. Richard Thomas, who was brilliant when I saw him in The Little Foxes, and I understand from someone who's seen it multiple times that he has only gotten better. Wonderful actor who keeps coming back to the theater, and all praise to him for that. And if Michael Aronoff won, I would be extremely happy. He also has a very, very colorful character in Oslo, and also a tricky character, I would say, but he plays it to the hilt, and he's great in that also. So am I supposed to be saying who I think deserves
it?
I can't.
Okay.
I can't.
That's... Nope. So I agree with all of you about Danny and John Douglas Thompson. I think John Douglas Thompson is my pick, and I think he's going to win it for the reason that I
lifetime I think, achievement.
I think that they're going to do that, and my logic for Danny DeVito doesn't hold up with the John Douglas Thompson, because I was going to say. They can't vote for Danny DeVito because his show is closed, but John Douglas Thompson's show is closed as well. And then there's the chance that Oslo is going to, you know, be a freight train.
Possibility
of that, and Michael could win, but my pick would be either John Douglas Thompson or Danny DeVito, but I have the edge on John Douglas Thompson. So next category, best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play. Joanna Day for Sweat, Jane Hattie Shell for A Doll's House Part 2, Cynthia Nixon in The Little Foxes, Condola Rashad in A Doll's House Part 2, and Michelle Wilson for Sweat. So we have a bunch of double show for this. Peter, what do you think?
Cynthia Nixon in A Walk, because her birdie was extraordinary beyond belief. So it was the performance that thrilled me the most. And the other four were quite fine. But doing birdie justice is not an easy thing to do. But Cynthia made it look so.
I heard an interview with Laura Linney on The Hollywood Reporter. And it was a Hollywood Reporter, maybe it was NPR. I forget who it was. I'll try to dig that up. And they talked about, they talked with Laura Linney, and they said, you know, what was going on here? How did this come up that it was double cast? And she said Manhattan Theater Club had asked her a number of times to do it, and she kept on saying no, kept on saying no. Mm. And then they brought in the variable of Cynthia Nixon, and then the possibility of trading it off and on, and that's what sealed the deal, that they've been asking her to do this for a number of seasons, and she kept on turning it down. So, Michael, what did you think about this category?
Well, I think I would discount Michelle Wilson and Joanna Day, because even though both were excellent, that play itself, as I said, Sweat, has some flaws, and also is more of a much more of an ensemble play than the others, I think. Jane Howdy Shell is her usual amazing, brilliant self as the maid in A Doll's House Part 2, and it would be lovely if she won. Condola Rashad, I saw two performances of A Doll's House Part 2. She was very good in the first one and excellent in the second one, and I always think that an actor deserves major props when they improve as they go along. That's just something I wanted to remark as far as her. And Cynthia Nixon, I thought, was very, very moving and entirely credible and really embodied Birdie on stage. I have to say, somebody told me the other day that I mentioned that I have not seen Cynthia as Regina, and somebody said, you have to go see her as Regina. Do everything possible. Do not miss that performance. So I don't have much time left, but I'm going to have to see if I can figure that one out.
All right. I think Cynthia Nixon's the best in this category, and I think she'll win it. So the best performance by an actor in a featured role in a musical, Gavin Creel in Hello, Dolly. Mike Feist. I keep getting it wrong. Feist in Dear Evan Hansen. Andrew Rannells in Falsettos, Lucas Steele and Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812, Brandon Uranowitz in Falsettos. So, Peter.
I would like to see it go to Brandon Uranowitz, who I thought really was the most at ease and natural in his role of anybody in this category. There's been a lot of talk about Gavin Creel, and it may be part of the Hello, Dolly groundswell, and I'm not going to complain about it. I also saw Lucas Steele recently, and I could be wrong about this, but I do believe they've unpunked his hairdo. It seemed to me very spiky when I saw it in the fall. It's not, at least the other night, it wasn't at all. And I think that's a big improvement. But you don't win Tonys for your hair. So anyway, no, I'm rooting for Brandon. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the one I'd like to see get it, because I think this is the toughest role. I mean, Cornelius in Hello, Dolly is a nice role, but I don't think it's a tremendously demanding role. But I do think Mendel in Falsettos is, and Brandon was certainly spectacular in doing it.
Are you telling me that the best hair category was cut as well as sound?
Yes, it was.
What are you, shocking.
Ironically, shocking. Grandma Jess does give one for hair and wig and did last week. Yeah, so there you go.
All right, Michael, what did you think?
I thought Mike Feist was perfect in Dear Evan Hansen, but didn't have all that much to do. And also, I have some issues with the writing of that character as well. I agree about Brandon Uranowitz. I thought he was a high point of that production, whereas Andrew Rannells, I thought, missed a tremendous amount in the character of Whizzer, though I think that may be partly the fault of his, largely the fault of his director, of whom I am not a fan.
Really?
Yeah. That'll be shocking news to you, won't it?
Enough said.
Alert the media. But Gavin Creel, if this award were for beauty of singing, he might have it hands down, because he really sings gorgeously as Cornelius in Hello Dolly. But it's not much of a part, is it?
No.
Acting.
No.
It really isn't. It's more of a device.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, he does it. Don't get me wrong. He does everything. He's charming.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But there again, beauty of singing, and it might also be Lucas, who is my choice, because there is some incredible singing. But also, I like the way he does the posturing of that character. I think he really does that at a level that's very appropriate for this very, very wild, broad, over the top production of Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet. So he's my choice, Lucas Steele.
Lucas has got quite a fan base of screaming young people for him, and so we'll have to hit the Twitter and find out if there has been a hair change notification out there.
Go ahead. You say it's still frosted blonde, but it's just not as spiky. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We were trying to have Lucas on to talk about Natasha Pierre a few months back, and our schedules just didn't jive, and he's not much of a Sunday morning kind of guy, but maybe after the summer sets in, we'll have Lucas on and we'll chat with him about Natasha Pierre, and we'll ask him about the hair as well. My pick here is Brandon Urinowitz. I think that he was just wonderful in Falsettos. Best performance by an actress in a featured role in a musical, Kate Baldwin, Hello Dolly, Stephanie J. Block for Falsettos, Jen Colella for Come From Away, Rachel Bay Jones for Dear Evan Hansen, and Mary Beth Peel for Anastasia. Peter.
Well, what we just said about Cornelius, I think, holds for Irene Malloy as well. I don't think it's a terribly demanding role. And Kate Baldwin may say, come and see what I do every night. Pay attention to every move I make and you may feel differently. So while I understand she's the odds on favorite to win, I would love to see either Jen Colella or Stephanie Block win. I'm fine with Mary Beth Peel, too. And that would be a type of Lifetime Achievement Award because she's been around for a good 30 years. And Rachel Bay Jones is lovely in her role, but Stephanie Block, especially for doing that wonderful "I'm Breaking Down" number, one of the best songs we've had in a long, long time, is really spectacular. I'm going to humiliate myself again by saying I hope it's a tie between Jen Colella and Stephanie J. Block.
All right, Michael, what do you think?
Peter, I'm surprised to hear you say that you think Kate Baldwin is the odds-on favorite.
Oh, yeah? You don't think so? You haven't heard that?
Okay. I mean, you know, who knows, but it's all who you talk to. But I think if I am hearing an odds on favorite, it's Jen Colella.
Yeah.
So we'll see, won't we? Everyone is great. Rachel Bay Jones, I have to say, when I saw the show Dear Evan Hansen off Broadway, I thought she was perfection and she made me cry. When I saw it on Broadway, I thought she was overdoing that vocal tick thing that she does a little too much. Maybe it was just that one night. I don't know. Maybe the repetition of the role has gotten to her. So I was disappointed in that. But the first time I saw her, she was great. Mary Beth Peel is the best, well, one of the best things in Anastasia. She brings a gravity and a seriousness of it that's otherwise sorely lacking, and also I've loved her for years, so I would mind seeing her win. And Stephanie, I completely agree about her rendition of that number in Falsettos, but also I thought she was the best person in the show overall, she and Brandon. Kate does a lovely job with Irene Malloy, but I echo what everyone has just said, and I think Jen, because of the combination of the performance and the type of role that she's playing, I think that she should get it and will get it.
So in this category, I went right away to Rachel Bay Jones because she affected me the most when I saw Dear Evan Hansen. I see all of your reasons there for the others. But I think that Rachel Bay Jones is my choice in this category.
Well, I'm going to say something about her because we often hear that today we don't have the funky type of performer, the eccentric type of performer that we used to have in the old days. And Rachel Bay Jones is one who does have those qualities. She is quite quirky. And to me, she's always a breath of fresh air. Well, I've only seen her really in two shows, that being Pippin in this one. But the quirkiness of this woman, the natural quirkiness without putting it on, laying it on thick, the way I always accuse Megan Lawrence of doing it, is something that I really think is impressive. I really believe that it's innate in her while it's put on by so many other people. And so as a result, I'm looking forward to many Rachel Bay Jones performances in the future. That will suit me fine.
I'm ashamed I don't remember. Did she get nominated and or win for Pippin?
No, she certainly didn't win. I don't think she was nominated.
She should have won a Tony for that performance.
Well, it was a very controversial performance. A lot of people didn't like it at all.
Oh, I thought she was just.
I agree. I agree. However, and I was girding my loins for it, you know, because of course she comes on late in Pippin, and I was thinking, here it comes. This performance I've heard so many bad things about, and I just embraced the, as I say, quirkiness, eccentricity of who she is. So I'm hoping we're going to see more. And frankly, let's see her in a starring role. Let's see her carry a show. I think she'd be able to do it. Being very good on a mattress, actually. She may not be the right age for it, but that's the type of quirkiness I'm talking about.
I was quickly clicking while you guys were talking, and she did not get nominated for Pippin.
I didn't think so.
Just a Drama Desk Award for Dear Evan Hansen and a nominee for Dear Evan Hansen this year as far as the IBDB goes, but interesting, I had forgotten that she was in Meet Me in St. Louis. Meet Me in St. Louis.
Wow.
She was in the ensemble. She was in Hair in the 2009 revival, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, Pippin and Dear Evan Hansen, according to the IBDB. Powered by IBM. I'm angling for an IBM sponsorship of the shows,
okay,
you know. All right, let's jump over to Best Direction of a Play, where we have Sam Gold in A Doll's House Part 2, Ruben Santiago Hudson for August Wilson's Jitney, Bart Lecher for Oslo, Daniel Sullivan for The Little Foxes, and Rebecca Taishman for Indecent. So, Peter.
I'd like to see it go to Rebecca because she had that wonderful image with the dust. For that alone, I would really to be fair, maybe it's written into the play. You know, it could very well be. But that's something you never know until you get the script, and nobody's given me a script to Indecent. So, but still, this is one of the few plays that I think did better by moving from the small space to the big space. So many plays get lost when they move from a small space, and that being the Vineyard on 15th Street, to a large stage. But the beauty of the way she used that stage and blocked everybody so wonderfully is one of the reasons why I'd like to see her get it.
Michael, what about you?
I will agree with Rebecca for should win and will win. I think everyone did a great job in this category. I probably would not personally vote for Sam Gold if I had a vote, because even though I thought his direction of this play was very good, what he has done to other plays offends me so much that I don't want to encourage him on any level. So I just wanted to mention that.
What if you encouraged him to go towards the Doll's House type of work that he has done? You know, maybe that's encouragement enough.
Well, as I and others have pointed out previously, he seems to do excellent work with new plays. And it's only when it's a classic that he feels he has to destroy it and rebuild it in his own mind. So if he just keeps doing new things, I think I'll be fine with him. Ruben Santiago Hudson did give us the best production of Jitney that I have seen as well. And that's by the way, one of August Wilson's best plays. Bartlett Sher did a great job with Oslo. I liked it better off Broadway just because I think the size of the space was more conducive. You all may recall that when Oslo originally opened at the New House, there was talk of if it would move and where it would move. And I was actually the one who said upstairs to the Beaumont. And I think it works fine there, but I think it might have worked better if they had been able to enclose the walls a little more, because as someone mentioned on a podcast a couple of weeks ago, you do occasionally feel like people are shouting. And I think that's because of the acoustics, because I don't think they're mic'd. So that's my only slight issue with that. And Daniel Sullivan, you know, I think maybe we shouldn't, but I think we take him for granted as one of our best directors. So it's not surprising that he came up with such a wonderful production of The Little Foxes.
My pick in this category is Bartlett Sher for Oslo. I'm just a big, huge fan of this production. The other shows are really wonderful as well, and I would not be surprised if Rebecca Taichman wins for Indecent, because as Peter is making a very good case for it, which I think is, you know, can't be disputed. So Best Direction of a Musical, we have Christopher Ashley for Come From Away, Rachel Chavkin for Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, Michael Greif for Dear Evan Hansen, Matthew Warchus for Groundhog Day, and Jerry Zaks for Hello, Dolly. So, wow. There's some big, big fights going on here on this one. So, Peter, start the brawl.
Oh, I definitely want Natasha to win because, wow, looking at the show, I've seen it both from the stage and in the orchestra, and just the blocking alone, you know, you stand here, you go over here, you move here. It's just such an amazing achievement. It's one of the most successful things I've seen with so-called environmental staging, and I am in awe of what this young woman has accomplished. So I definitely, without any question whatsoever, feel that this is the award that really should go to somebody and nobody else. I don't feel this strongly about any other category as I do this one here. So under those circumstances, I think it is going to be a true miscarriage of justice if indeed we don't see the Best Director prize go to this woman. And I'm rooting for her night and day.
Michael, what do you think?
I 99.9% agree with that. My only issue is that there are some seats at that theater, which has been we've discussed before, from which this production really does not work, namely only the first few rows of the orchestra because of the way that the playing space is configured and who else is sitting where. And it's a little too complicated to get into again, but just trust me. If I were to give the award for the off-Broadway production, which I saw in the original, well, not the original site, which was Ars Nova, but when it moved down to the tent in the meatpacking district, which they called Casino, I thought that was some of the greatest direction I've seen in my life. But I think I think she should get it anyway, because I don't think that this issue that I mentioned at the Imperial Theater, I don't think it's her fault. And I'm not sure how she would have gotten around it. So I'm with Peter. I would also say I think Christopher Ashley did a really wonderful job in Come From Away, specifically in terms of, as we mentioned before, keeping the storytelling very clear, despite the fact that all of the cast play multiple roles, and that can lead to chaos, but it does not. So I think he gets a definite nod for that.
So I have to disagree with the two of you there in that what you're saying about Natasha Pierre is 100% valid, and it's really amazing. But I had such low expectations of Groundhog Day that when I went into it and saw how Matthew Warchus told the story there and how he got around things that are inevitably very difficult to do when translating a film onto the stage. He came up with ingenious ways to tell the story, and I don't think that Rachel Chavkin went up against those type of barriers to overcome. And I mean, Adat Shapir is amazing, and she is absolutely amazing. I just think that Matthew probably edged her out by a nose here for his direction of Groundhog Day the musical. So,
well, there again, apples and oranges.
Yeah.
You know, one is an adaptation of a popular movie, and the other one is an adaptation of 100 pages of War and Peace. You know, so
absolutely. And funny story from the Theater World Awards. Who was it that was saying they got up to introduce an honoree, and he said, I can't remember who it was that said, you know, I made my debut on this stage. Well, maybe not this stage, below this stage, because Natasha Pierre is on top of it. You know?
Yeah, that was John Rubinstein.
Oh, it was John. It was John.
Who was in Pippin in 1972, so at the Imperial. Yes, indeed.
It was very funny. All right, in the Best Choreography category, we have Andy Blankenbuehler for Bandstand, Peter Darling and Ellen Kane for Groundhog Day, Kelly Devine from Come From Away, Dennis Jones and Holiday Inn, the new Irving Berlin musical, and Sam Pickleton, Natasha Pierre, and The Great Comet of 1812. Peter.
Andy Blankenbuehler, but Bandstand is the show that had the most opportunity for choreography, not including, of course, Hello, Dolly, but that was deemed ineligible because it was too much like Our Champion's original work. But this is going to be the award that goes to Andy, not only because he's well-liked in the community and not only because he's still getting a lot of that Hamilton shine, but because he had more to do in terms of choreography than most of the others. You could say that Sam Pinkleton really, that who knows how much he did in terms of choreography, because the dancing is so bizarrely staged that he may very well be deserving of the credit that I'm giving to Rachel Chavkin. It's entirely possible. The only other show that really had as much choreography as we know it as choreography was Holiday Inn, but that wasn't very well received, and I think this really was a bone to be thrown to it. Now, some could say, of course, Bandstand got a bone thrown to it too, because it certainly didn't do well in the Tonys aside from this category, but still, people enjoy seeing 40-ish, 50-ish type dancing, and that's what people think of most when they think of a choreography, so I do believe he is the most deserving of the bunch.
All right, Michael, what did you think?
I'm going to beg off on this category because I think everyone did stellar work in completely different styles, and I just can't compare them.
Huh. All right. And I will go with Peter's thinking on Bandstand that I think that that was certainly in my way of thinking of what choreography is,
pulled
off the best.
Yeah.
All right. Any best orchestrations? Our final category of this morning, Bill Elliott and Greg Anthony Raisin for Bandstand, Larry Hotchman for Hello, Dolly, Alec Lockamore for Dear Evan Hansen, and Dave Malloy for Natasha Pierre and The Great Comet of 1812. So, Peter.
Well, you know, we haven't mentioned Dave Malloy very much, have we, in terms of the winners? And there is a unique sound to Natasha Pierre. Bill Elliott did make that sound very authentic in Bandstand, along with Greg Anthony Raisin. But and of course, there are some sweetenings and interesting little twists in the Hello, Dolly orchestration that Larry Hawkman did. But again, it's not unlike the situation. I'm surprised they let him in this category because, after all, it's not that different from Warren Carlyle in choreography. But I think it's going to go to Dave Malloy. I think this is an award he will win. And what we have to mention here is, of course, that Natasha did get the most nominations, 12 of any other show. And while that doesn't ensure wins, because we've seen it happen before, that the show that gets the most nominations is not assured of winning the most awards, I do think that this is the one they're going to give him if they don't give him anything else.
Michael.
Well, an interesting question here is when you're judging who should get a Best Orchestrations Award, I think it becomes a little more difficult to do that when you're comparing a full standard Broadway orchestra like Hello Dolly with the forces that they use for Natasha Pierre. So I just wanted to make that point. I think Dave Malloy, who was a guest on our podcast very early on, I think during the original run, well, the run of the Natasha Pierre at Casino down in the Meatpacking District. I think he did a really great job and makes it sound like there are far more musicians than there actually are. The Hello Dolly orchestrations, I like them. I think they're a little disappointing to me and not being quite as good as the originals. Absolutely. The bandstand sound to me is credibly late 40s, and that's a big plus there. I would go with Natasha Pierre.
So I was thinking to myself, if only Sunset Boulevard was in here with their 45-piece orchestra.
Yeah, that was surprising and disappointing, really. I'm sure everybody connected with Sunset Boulevard is really upset that that didn't happen.
Yeah, the Sunset had an original and revival cast party yesterday that was well attended, and
really,
and lots of fun was had by all there. But I think that Dave Malloy is going to walk away with this little statue, although there's something to be said for Alex Lacamoire's work and Dear Evan Hansen.
Sure there is.
Either one of those would be I'd be happy with, but I think my choice is Dave Malloy. All right, so before we wrap up for this morning, I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to these broadcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com. There's a subscribe link that way each and every time we have a new episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to iTunes for you. Of course, you don't have to listen to us in iTunes. You can listen to us in many ways. One of the ways is the Stitcher app, which is an application for your iPhone or your BlackBerry, your Android device. You can also listen to us through Broadway World Radio, places Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m., iHeartRadio, Google Play, Play Now, various anywhere that you get your finer podcasts, you'll be able to find Broadway Radio as well. Contact information for Peter and for Michael and me, as well as links to some of the things we've talked about today, are also found at BroadwayRadio.com. And Peter, what do we have for last week's trivia?
Last week, I asked, what do Allegro, Dreamgirls, Grey Garden, Ragtime, and the Will Rogers Follies all have in common? And the answer is all have characters who are juniors. Joseph Taylor Jr., Curtis Taylor Jr., Joseph Kennedy Jr., Coldhouse Walker Jr., and Will Rogers Jr. So Chris Skile was the only one to get it. Jack Lesner did not get it, but as compensation, what he did was offer his own trivia question, which I am certainly going to give right now because I think it's a very good one. What musical of this decade contains the actual name of a musical from the last decade? That's Jack's question. I think it's a good one, and I hope you all get it.
All right. So if you get that question, email us at trivia@broadwayradio.com, and we'll let you know if you are on the right track. So on behalf of Peter Felicia and Michael Portantier, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway. Bye-bye.
Bye.